a variety of programs. Our largest program supports older adults to stay in their homes and also supports caregivers. We also have a long, big mental health program, some employment services, some financial assistance. I have a community chaplaincy program here that, Sarah, you're nodding your head.
Yeah, we have one too. Yeah.
Oh, I'd love to hear about that. That is fairly new for us, and our chaplain, who happens to be a rabbi, provides spiritual care and connections to community members who are not connected in other ways, and also some a variety of family programming. We serve around 3,500 people a year, both provide services both to the Jewish community and the larger community. And as I was saying earlier, I am new to this role. I joined the JFS family here in September as the CEO. Although it is coming home for me in many ways. I served as the assistant director of the agency from 2005 to 2011. So it's great to be with you here today.
So you took time off and then you came back as number
mm-hmm.
one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, they liked you.
I hope so.
That's great.
Yeah, it's been great. Thanks.
Wonderful. Sarah from Ottawa.
Okay, so we're a little bit on the kind of the end of the spectrum. We're around $6.5 million.
Okay.
Like many of you, we have a large settlement services for Jewish and obviously the larger settlement organization. We've done a lot of work with the Syrian refugee population. We also have a very significant mental health program, as well as we do work with low-income Jewish families and have a lot of work around that, and then a very large seniors programming, both okay. for Jewish seniors and for diverse seniors.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also fairly new. I haven't finished my first year in the role. April 22nd would be my first full year.
Oh.
But I have been at the organization for 16 years and was one of the assistant executive directors. So I like to say I kind of grew up here.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Thanks.
Marla from Southern New
Hi, Marla.
Hey, everybody. Good afternoon. I'm Marla Myers. I'm the executive director of Jewish Family and Children's Service of Southern New Jersey. So we're in the Cherry Hill, Camden, Burlington County area, not quite the Atlantic City area. That's another JFS. But we're sort of the suburb of Philadelphia. I have been in this role for 7.5 years. I had worked prior in Philadelphia at Hillel, Hillel of Greater Philadelphia, which I worked there for 25 years, so
really
my second gig in life. Big gig, anyway. I guess motherhood and other things are a big gig, too. Our agency is on the higher end. We're at about $7.5 million. We have 150 staff people at this time. We have 4 locations, and we're serving 11,000 clients each year.
Mm-hmm.
Our services include, much like all of you, lots of mental health services, lots of community education. We have a very large senior services department, volunteer department, family mm-hmm. assistance department that has 3 food pantries and a domestic violence program, including a safe house. We have a special needs program that is really focused on vocational training. We also have a day program and Special Olympics teams. And next week, we're opening up housing for special needs, which is a
You're new opening program. What? What are you opening, Marla?
A residential program for special needs clients. Yeah. So that should be exciting. I mean, it is. We've been working on it for years. So it's actually happening after the state licenses us.
And congratulations.
That's huge. Yeah,
I hope it's a congratulations.
It is.
It's going to be a headache in the beginning.
Congratulations for the families, for sure. We work with a lot of Holocaust survivors, about 150 in our region.
Mm-hmm.
And our footprint of 11,000 clients, I'd say about half are Jewish. We are, you know, our food pantries really serve a lot of clients that are not Jewish. Our counseling is a good amount Jewish. Seniors always is. But we also were very unique in that we are part of a federation system in South Jersey. The federation, the Jewish Federation, actually the parent company for all of the agencies.
Fascinating.
It's very fascinating. And good in many ways and challenging in others. So in our area, like I'm in a building with a Jewish community campus that houses the JCC. And the JCC of Cherry Hill is one of the best in the country. I don't know if you've ever been acquainted with it, but it's tremendous. So in our facility is JCRC, our Jewish newspaper, the Jewish Community Foundation, as well as JFCS and the Jewish Federation. And the Federation actually has the 501c3 for all of us.
Oh.
And it's a fascinating system because the Federation is smaller than us and the JCC, financially speaking, although they do a lot of amazing things in the community. But you can only imagine what goes on with all these agencies and, you know, independent.
What about fundraising?
And we all have boards, but yet the real fiduciary board is the Federation. So,
wow.
A lot of politics.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So that's my story. And I love New Jersey, and I've always lived here.
So what about fundraising? Does everyone fundraise?
That's my question,
too.
Well, we all share some donors. We all do our own thing. We try to collaborate. There's historically a lot of punching and fighting and things, but it's calmed down as of late. And the reality is the Federation would like to think it can raise the money and give it to all of us, but it can't.
Okay.
And so, you know, our budget is raised. The money's raised by myself and our associate executive director. The two of us are the chiefs of many things, including the fundraising. So, of course, we do bring in revenues, client fees in that $7 million, but we raise millions a year. And the fact is that we have a product to sell that's a little different than the others. And, you know, we try to do it well. But there is definitely crossover, and there's walking on toes and trying to negotiate, and I think that we're at a good place right now.
Carla, I just have one more question, just for clarification. Do you have your own board of directors?
Well, I do. We do, the JCC does, but at the end of the day, the fiduciary is the Federation board. So it's kind of like we exist, but we don't exist.
So it's programmatic more than anything else.
Well, but they watch over all the finances. They act like a real board of, they're called the board of directors. They act that way. But legally speaking, they sort of don't really have that much power. But politically speaking, my board has a lot of power.
They're right.
Who are very strong. And then you have people that are on my board and the Federation board, or my board, and then the spouse is on the JCC board. It's and Cherry Hill is very.
That sounds very familiar.
It took, it takes a while to get used to.
Oh, that's interesting. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How about hearing from Al? Al in Winnipeg.
Hi, everyone. It's Al from Winnipeg. Our agency budget around $3.5 million. I like to say I did an old West Side Story stint in high school, so we're a womb to tomb service. I think I'm the only one around the Zoom meeting here, and only one of two Jewish agencies in Canada that are mandated child welfare, children's aid. Us in Toronto. So that's sort of where our cradle starts, way down in the child welfare. We do licensed foster care. We do investigations. We have children in foster care under our own guardianship. We've been doing that over 100 years in Winnipeg. And then we go right across the lifespan, like most agencies. We have mental health, addictions services, counseling services, older adult services, including Holocaust survivors. We do lots of immigration work, so we also have a big cohort of newcomer seniors that we're dealing with, mostly Russian-speaking, so we have to deal with them quite uniquely as those of you doing work with the Russian population. Now,
Right.
We have lots of financial assistance programs. We're also our local Hebrew Free Loan Program.
Mm-hmm.
Big volunteer cohort. And did a presentation, when was it, Lisa, on our initiative with Yazidi refugees. So we've been doing a lot of work in that area as well. Sort of in response to the Syrian wave, our community took on Yazidi refugees from northern Iraq. Just lots of different stuff going on in terms of how we're moving forward. Our biggest focus is right now strategically on mental health and addictions. Primarily because we're helping bring it to the forefront in our community. We also have, I'm sure in the U.S. as well, some amazing national initiatives on stigma reduction. And as a result, people are coming up for service and responding to that. So pretty eclectic agency like most of ours are.
I love listening to the breadth of services that we all do. It's just incredible.
And chat.
How about
somebody Milana? Somebody had mentioned chaplaincy, so I'd love to talk some chaplaincy sometime too.
Yeah, would love to. Mm-hmm.
Is Milana on the phone? I hope I said that name right.
Yes, but
muted.
She's muted. I unmuted you, Milana. There you are.
Okay.
Milana, can you hear us?
I don't see her still on the screen. One sec.
I see her still on the screen, but and you're unmuted. Are you still
here?
Milana, are you still there? Maybe go to someone else. I just wanted to say about chaplaincy, you know that I can't even remember the name, but the National Association of Chaplaincy has now joined the network. So
right.
We're going to be working with a lot of chaplains having an affinity group and having them all connect with each other as well. Okay, great.
I don't know if Milana's up, but where is she from?
From the Blue Card in New York City. It's an organization that works with Holocaust.
Got it. Okay. How about Liz?
Okay, Liz, I have to unmute too because she was on the phone and there was noise. Liz, now you have to unmute yourself because I muted you and you muted yourself. There you are.
There we go. Yes, I muted. My apologies. You might have heard some cracker snacking in the background. I am... in my third year, CEO of Jewish Family Service of Greater Cincinnati. And we are a $7 million agency. We have a lot of revenue from fundraising, but also our home care business has become really important to us.
Mm.
And it marries so beautifully with our mission in terms of serving survivors. And it also helps to fill a gap created when we sold the Jewish Home of Cincinnati about two years ago. So it's evolved. It's emerged as a really important community initiative along with our Age Well Cincinnati platform. So one front door for aging services in Greater Cincinnati. What else do we do? A lot of counseling like all of you sound like you do. Vital services. We have two food pantries and a food drop.
Wow.
And yeah. And we're really working a lot on self-sufficiency. And so with that, we've also begun rolling out, believe it or not, Financial Peace University, which is a financial literacy and wealth building program launched by someone who is a fundamentalist Christian. And we just completed our first program in our most conservative Orthodox synagogue, and it was a huge success. So we're starting to roll that throughout the city.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Maybe you'll write that up as one of the for an award next year, and we can all learn about it or do a webinar.
Right.
You know, it's something that we looked at our own team, and our own team of social workers underwent some financial literacy training and some training on how to work with our clients. Mm-hmm. And what we found there was even within our professional team, it's a skill set that we can all grow. And then we married up some data with our community study that we just completed in Cincinnati. And we see that 28% of the community doesn't have an emergency fund in place. So a $400 emergency would be problematic.
Right.
And we said that's too high. And the shame and embarrassment that comes with that is too high as well. And so it's interesting that the first partner that helped us roll this out is a very conservative Orthodox synagogue, and they were very comfortable with the value set, even though there at times with some of this Christian language versus more familiar context. So we had 63 participants.
Wow.
That's impressive. First step for all of them was to save $1,000. Second step is to get out of debt. And third step is to have a 3 to 6 month emergency fund. So we think that's going to have a pretty big impact.
I think I need to be in that class.
Hey, that sounds great to me. So that's wonderful.
Right.
Anything more, Liz?
No, good high level look at us.
Okay. Once we introduce ourselves, then we're going to find out what problems we have. And then I thought we should touch on the coronavirus if there's any time.
Sure, Lisa, we're going to get to it. How about Pauline?
So, hi, everybody. I'm the executive director at the Cumming Center in Montreal. I've been here for 5 years. We are also one of the distributors, I would say, disbursements of funds through the Claims Conference for Montreal, for Winnipeg, Hamilton, Windsor, Ontario, and for Calgary. So with that, we oversee about a $13 million budget that comes for the Holocaust survivors and gets distributed amongst the various agencies. So that is one of the pieces that we do that is unique. We are also, I think, a little bit unique in being a community center that has a social services arm for seniors, but it's 50 plus. So I don't consider myself an older adult. So we start at 50 plus. And there we have a lot of what some of the JFS have. Here in Montreal, OMETS is the social services arm for young children all the way up to the age of 64. Clients get transferred at 65 to Cummings. And for mental health clients, they transfer the clients at 55. So we work in partnership and try to reduce the transitions between our Montreal clientele. So we're the two, I guess, social services arms in Montreal. And the rest of our community center is focused on programming, education, socialization, as well as volunteerism. So we have about over 900 volunteers that work in the agency, and many of our programs themselves are supported through volunteer action. So, example, we have a little boutique that runs here. We have a part-time staff, and we have about 100 volunteers that work in the boutique that otherwise we would not be able to run some of our programming. So we do everything in programming, you know, from programs in wellness and in arts, arts and fine arts, and in woodshop and crafts, as well as programs for more adapted clienteles in, I would say it's like post-rehab here in terms of that clientele, Parkinson's, aphasia, dementia, and those areas. So we have a lot of stuff going on in our agency.
Yeah.
We have a foundation, our own foundation, the Cummings Jewish Center for Seniors Foundation, that help raise funds for and solely for our agency, as well as being affiliated under the umbrella of Federation CJA in Montreal. So we are one of 13 affiliated agencies that receive funding from Federation. So globally, you know, we have about a $17 million budget with the Claims Conference monies that is the bulk of it, the $13 million. So I think that for us, you know, we've been in the last 5 years, I would say, in really looking and assessing at our infrastructure when I first came in, to be able to look at the areas of support that needed. We redid our strategic plan my second year here. So we're finishing our second full year of our strat plan. We are a membership organization, so there is a small membership, $45 membership fee for any of our programs and pieces like that. We work, I think, at high level. One of the main pieces for us is working together with the other agencies to really collaborate and to fine-tune what we should do and what possibly other people should take on and do. So I think we're kind of in that growth phase of really looking at, you know, what is our mission? What should we be supporting through community and what could maybe go elsewhere? So we're kind of in that. And we're new to the network. So,
that's cool.
We're brand new to the network. So we're excited about all the affinity groups. And we were at the conference last year, and actually myself and Nancy Master were on a panel for the claims conference in terms of our presentation dealt with getting other agencies and community to support matching funds for the program. So we were part of that panel.
Wonderful. Right. Thank you and welcome. That's great.
Thank you. I'm very excited.
Wonderful. We look forward to, of course, all connecting at the conference, I hope. And last, I think, unless I'm missing somebody else, is Susan. And I think you might need to unmute her, Lisa.
No, she has to unmute herself.
Oh, okay.
Hi. Hello.
Hi.
You know what? I don't know how to turn on my screen. Start video. Okay.
Right. I was going to say.
Hi.
Yay. Okay,
there you are.
Hi there. So we are a pretty traditional Jewish family service agency.
What's not to say where you are?
We are in northern New Jersey. We cover 2.5 counties in northern New Jersey, Bergen, a big chunk of Passaic, and Hudson counties. We merged two small agencies 3 years ago. So we're the result of a merger, and we are still trying to, we've come a very long way since the merger, but we're involved in actualizing, in beginning to actualize a formal strategic plan that we completed last summer. So we're currently in 3 sites. We likely will be shrinking back to 1 site within the next 2 years. We own a building. Our main building has very inadequate parking. So we're dealing with, and we're needing to fundraise much more than twice as much as the two agencies combined. But partially because our catchment area is enormous and the need seems to be growing. We're also in a very affluent area. But fund development seems to be more and more challenging all the time. And I'm quite sure all of us are experiencing that relative to the need. Big chunk of what we do is mental health services. So it's psychotherapy for everybody from cradle to grave. More than 50% of the psychotherapy that we do is with children and teens. So I'd be interested in knowing what the mix is for everybody. And one of my questions moving forward is really how I would love to know how everybody manages their mental health budgets amidst all of the various reimbursement and sliding fee scale and the very challenging insurance landscape. A lot of senior services. Our grant from the claims conference is $2.7 million. Wow. So that's a huge chunk of what we do. And then the third area is what we call aid and advocacy. We also have 2 food pantries. And we do emergency services around housing and really anything that comes through our doors. So that's us in a nutshell.
That's wonderful. Is there anybody that we miss?
No, but Milana wrote to us and she can hear everything we're saying. So hi there. But she's having technical difficulties and she can't get her microphone working. So,
okay.
Thanks for listening. If you have anything you want to add, of course, keep on writing in the chat box, Alana.
Great. I know that Lisa wanted to talk about how we're all managing the coronavirus, if it has affected us at all. And there was one other topic that I thought we could table and do another time. And I just was curious about insurances and how people are dealing with different insurance programs in terms of getting coverage for your programs. And et cetera, et cetera. But I just want to throw out for the future. But anyway, Lisa.
No. I think that the network is going to have a call on Monday at 4 p.m. Eastern about the coronavirus. So you can write that down. You'll get an invitation later today. If that's not what's on everyone's mind, let's do what's on your minds. That's just what I thought people could be thinking about. But we'll do it on Monday as a network call as well.
Okay. I do have a question. This is Marla. Is there any chance that our conference is in question?
There is a chance. We're working with, the CDC and the JFNA, and we also have Jewish Funders Network. We have to determine whether it's going to be safe to have this conference. You know, we're working with the hotel to make sure that they have hand sanitizers everywhere and can wipe everything down. And
My goodness.
Potentially have a doctor on call at all times. We will not be having this conference if it's going to, you know, be a big threat for everyone. It depends. We've gotten a few people who have called us in the past 2 days to cancel. So we have to really there are a lot of fees, as everyone knows, when you cancel a conference, and we don't want to incur all of those fees, but we don't want to jeopardize. That's more important.
Yeah, it's complicated.
Being of our members. So
interruption of business insurance.
Yeah. I was going to buy my plane ticket. I guess I should wait.
I'll tell you, I asked our office manager to ask anyone who hasn't booked to hold off, because to me, I'm looking at, if it does come to our region, is it the right thing for us not to be here if we're going to end up being short-staffed? And in particular, I'm worried about home care. If they shut schools, will our aides be able to come to work? And so I think it's the wrong time for the senior leadership team not to be here. And it's too soon to know, right? We just don't know yet.
Right, it's too soon to know. But we are going to have to make a decision, I think, within the next 2 or 3 weeks so that people can plan accordingly. And you know, it's on everyone's minds. You know, you're not the only ones. We really have to come to a decision. And I think we're going to be talking with people in the know who have done this.
Tough.
Does it, if it were, you know, let's say in 2 weeks, would people be coming?
Yes.
Yes.
I would.
Yep.
I would. Yep.
Okay. So I guess we'll just see how it goes from here.
Well, I think people's comfortability. Some people are more comfortable traveling. Some people, you know, are concerned about being on airplanes. Some people don't care about it. So I think it's going to come down to what the organization feels is the safest thing to do.
Right.
And I would say I would be uncomfortable going, just because I'm worried about being trapped someplace, being asked to be quarantined. I think if there were a problem here, and I hope there's not, but we're planning for the worst here, and then hoping that we get to throw all these plans in the wastebasket in a few months. But I would be a little bit concerned about not being accessible if something did break.
And this is Ruth in St. Paul, and Lisa, I would just, of course, to state the obvious, I think the it's so hard, the timing is so hard, and things change so quickly. The sooner the organization can and make their decision, and it's what a difficult situation, that would be appreciated by me.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm sure you do. I'm stating the obvious.
Mm-hmm. Yep, we've all been thinking about that, but honestly, I hadn't thought about what Liz just said.
Yeah.
What if we were quarantined in Dallas and not able to get back? I never thought about that. You know,
that's my number. Yeah. That's the only thing I'm worried about. I'm not worried about getting sick. I'm not worried about traveling. I'm not worried about anything other than not being able to get back to my agency and my family. I have 3 school-age children, so I mean, everyone's got.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But.
Mm-hmm. I was supposed to go to Italy in 2 weeks, so obviously that's canceled.
That's canceled. So sorry. To Copenhagen for Passover. We're planning to go. My son is in Copenhagen for the semester, and we plan to go for Pesach, so.
I bet you Copenhagen you'll be okay. I mean, I don't know, but
there are 15 cases in the country of Denmark, and I feel like it's the safest place to be. Right. So,
wow.
I think each situation is different, and I think for you guys in terms of the conference, you really need to be looking at what's going on and what's trending in terms of other like conferences taking place in the state.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. We will.
And
it is just 6 degrees of separation. In the case of me, it's really 2 degrees because, you know, that person in Westchester, back from Israel, Miami, is next door neighbors or 2 doors down from my best friend who lives in Westchester. And then another friend was in synagogue with him on Friday night, of course, hugged him. Where have you been? How was your trip? And now she's quarantined.
Well, we know kids all over my community, kids are quarantined because they were in school with his daughter.
Right, so that's why it's becoming more of a pandemic, I guess, and who knows where it's going to go. And Seattle has been in touch with us. You know, they're having a really difficult time with all their home care. You know, they have a lot of older adult services.
I think in term separate and apart from the conference, we met yesterday really just to go over all of our protocols relative to the situation and if we are down on staff, as some of you have indicated, and how we're dealing with seniors and kosher meals on wheel. You know, should things close down, or we don't have access, or we don't have volunteers, or we don't have staff. You know, all of the various. Mm-hmm. We talked about doing therapy via Zoom, whether we're reimbursed or not. You know, needing to really go through our caseloads and, determining what's, who needs to meet anyway, in some fashion. It really extends to everything that we do.
Right.
And I'm not sure I've never been prepared for anything like this.
Mm-hmm. That's why we want to have a network call. But I do know about telemental health. As long as your social worker or therapist is licensed in the state where your client is, you can do counseling online.
And we'll be reimbursed for it.
And you can be
not always. That I would not count on. All insurances will reimburse you for it at all.
Wait, Marla, what?
You can't necessarily get reimbursed from all insurance companies for telehealth.
Well, maybe not all insurance companies, but when I was at JFS of Greenwich, all of our insurance companies that we were with reimbursed us for telemental health.
Well, as long as
social worker was in the same, but maybe it's changed. That was like 4 years ago.
I wouldn't count on getting reimbursed always.
Okay.
But you have to find out. We're actually doing some studying on that right now to determine how we can do it.
Mm-hmm.
And you also have to follow a lot of protocols about how to conduct it to ensure HIPAA compliance.
That is so true. Yeah. Good point, Marla. That is the most.
You'll need to learn more about it.
Right.
I'm trying. It's confusing.
So we were thinking of doing another telemental health training course here.
My clinical director was on that call. He said it was a very good call and helpful.
So maybe we can do that again for people. That might be something that we think about in the future if things like this were to happen, you know, moving forward. So thanks for clarifying, Marla. You're right. People need to check with their own insurance companies.
Right.
So Maxine, did you want to talk about something around insurance?
Can I just tell you a dilemma that we're in right now? I'm curious about, because I'm wondering if we're going too small in our insurance. So we've had, you know, we stay with our local insurance company, and we have, it's always been fine. And 2 programs raised massive red flags to them this year. One was our elder guardianship and conservatorship program. It's one of five in the state. And my concern was that it was out of the blue. They suddenly decided they were worried about possible financial errors that an agency could carry and the vulnerabilities, et cetera, even though it's, I don't know if any of you know anything about the legal conservatorship and guardianship, but it's a very, very complicated program. It's actually, FYI, the only program that if we had to do anything about a pandemic, we would be affected. We felt today when we talked that everything else could sit for a week or two or three, but this particular vulnerable population, we are them for 24/7. So we got through that one, but the one that's most painful is that we started a youth mentorship program with refugee youth and professionals in the area, and it has taken off. These are kids 15 to 18, 18, 19. It has taken off. It has made the newspapers. It is just the most beautiful thing, you know, one of these just beautiful, beautiful programs, right? And they take a look at it. They went on our website when they were doing, just look at our website. And they lost it when they saw that we were allowing a mentor to be alone with a mentee if the kid was under 18 years old, even though the volunteer had been queried and had been this and the referee, you know, the whole nine yards. And they refused to, they asked us to close it down.
Wow.
And this is literally right after this gorgeous newspaper article came out. And it's just a beautiful program. And of course, anything can happen, I understand. So we started, you know, fishing around. I spoke with Jewish Big Brothers, Big Sisters in Boston. We spoke with the other Big Brothers, Big Sisters program, because this is not an unusual model around mentoring. And it sounds like they are part of a national affiliate organization, which they all go through. But I wanted to check with all of you about who does your insurance. I found out here last evening that our local JCC is part of an international group that they belong to with other JCCs and organizations, and that's how they're insured. And so I want to take a look at whether or not we are just, you know, too small. Our organization is working with someone that's just way too small, way too local. Are you all sticking with local insurance companies? Are you going national for your work? You've got a home care business. You've got, I mean, listening to all these different things that you're doing. And so I just kind of threw it out, and I don't expect necessarily anybody to have the answers for me, but I just thought if you do, or if you have thoughts about how we all do our insurances for our agents around our programs, I just curious if that's an issue.
We work with my agency has been working with a local broker who obviously engages the big, you know, the big insurance carriers on our behalf. But but the person we deal with is, and we've actually evaluated in the last couple of years. We had somebody else check things out, and in our experience, working with somebody local who knows us has been positive thus far.
Wonderful. So you haven't run into anything?
No, we haven't run into any issues. And we have one guardianship. We don't have a program. We were asked by the court to take on one guardianship. I don't think it raises any big
flags. Oh, that works. Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Mentoring thing sounds way over the top, like a major overreaction.
Right. Has anyone else ever had any program red flagged or said they wouldn't insure? Yeah, that's unusual.
Yeah.
Oh, Liz
we exited our mentoring.
I'm sorry.
Sorry, it's Liz Vogel from Jewish Family Service in Cincinnati.
Yep.
It's funny to say Jewish Family Service because we all we did migrate away from one-on-one mentoring several years ago because it seems that pedophiles actually their online forums where they learn how to beat the test, so to speak.
Oh.
And so
terrible.
So there's Yes, it's disgusting. So there are international conversations underway where they're educating each other on how to get through the safety nets. Mm-hmm. So we went to a group program where mm-hmm. no one's one-on-one with kids anymore. And in mm-hmm. fact, we even exited that about a year and a half ago. But with that, I did go to a risk management program that was sponsored by panelists from three different insurance organizations. And the liabilities around youth today are outrageous. If you look right. at what's happening to the Boy Scouts of America, they had to declare bankruptcy. So mm-hmm. yeah, I'm not surprised at all at what happened to you within the context of that yeah. risk forum, frankly.
Yep. Yep. Thank you for validating that. I totally agree. Obviously, it all is all coming. Now, in terms of what you just talked about, we're dealing with 13 people here who are all professionals who we all know. I mean, so they're not strangers to the agency. Mm-hmm. They were all recruited very carefully. And like I said, they are well known to the agency. So I'm not worried, and it's not that large a program. So I'm not worried about people infiltrating per se, but it's the very liability of a person being alone with a 16-year-old mm-hmm. that just top now for insurance.
And that's it. And it's been such a tidal wave of cases
yeah.
that are being prosecuted right now that the insurance companies are spooked from what they were sharing with us. So,
yeah.
and
yeah.
the legislation's been rewritten so that the, you know, that the go back period is so much longer. The statute of limitations has been yeah. Extended. So the risk has increased that way too. So it's not your program, it's the insurance companies being very afraid.
Right. Yes. Thank you. It's frustrating as heck. We just don't know what to do. We talked about doing the big group and all that, but you know, unfortunately it just, you know, the flavor, the program is very different.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a shame.
I know.
Susan, you
have our challenge is health insurance. Our brokers are one. Our other liability insurances are handled by a regional broker. Our health insurance is local, and we have gone through Form Fire, and we saw a 38% increase in our health insurance rates this year. And
whoa.
So, right, mm-hmm. right.
Whoa.
And in fact, after this call is my next meeting is to introduce that to our team because our renewal starts April 1st, so the new rates.
Yeah.
So that's been a huge struggle if anyone has any thoughts on that.
Yeah, the network has a great insurance benefits. You should come on the call that we're having on March 25th for next year, potentially. You could get yeah. in then.
Well, actually, we're month to month, so we could start.
You should
Unless
definitely
plan.
Be on that call. I'll send it to you after this call, the information.
Thank you.
So I was about to say, Susan, you had mentioned something that you wanted to discuss with this group or brought up something about.
Well, it was around managing counseling, mental health services, because it seems to be, it's becoming more and more challenging every day. Mm-hmm. Just keeping, it's virtually impossible to attract clinicians. We can't pay them enough
yeah.
to compete with anything that they would be earning in private industry and also benefits and so forth. And I'd love to just know what everybody's models are around, you know, like who does the therapy? Does the reimbursement cover what you're paying people? Are you, you know, sort of, are you supplementing your budgets? Like, what does it look like? We, pre-merger in my smaller Bergen agency, we were doing a little bit better than balancing the budget in counseling. We had gotten to that place.
Mm.
And I don't know if it's the trends, you know, the sort of the nature of referrals is changing all the time. It seems that we're, a lot of our referrals are more intense cases, so that means more no-shows and less consistency and holding slots. And, you know, it's all over the map. So I'm just very curious to hear what methodology is around. And we have all subcontractors. I have very few salaried clinicians. So I'd love to just know how everybody is doing it.
So Susan, I'm sorry. Did someone else just say something?
Okay, I'll go after. Sarah from Ottawa will go after.
Okay, what I really want to say is that this is a big topic, and I wouldn't be surprised that each of us could really, I think, would it be helpful if maybe for the next call we at least outlined, or at least a group of us who was interested, at least outlined the, you know, the bare bones of what our mental health programming looks like.
And from an administrative vantage point, yeah.
Right. What you're really talking about is staffing, and you're talking about how to attract and what kind of programs do attract and how are you paying for people and reimbursing.
Correct. How are you paying to provide the services?
Right.
In other words, yeah, how are you paying? Yeah.
Who has, I mean, I know in Massachusetts we're in the process of applying to become a mental health clinic, a licensed mental health clinic. Mm. Now we actually operate as a group practice. That's how things go through here. And we know that needs to change. I don't know what other people, how you all are handling.
So, right. I think all of it is relevant. We happen to be licensed by the state, so we can get all forms of reimbursement. But all forms of reimbursement don't seem to be covering expenses. That's really what it comes down to.
So you're still losing money on your counseling. Where
correct.
You're making money. I understand. Sarah, were you going to say something about this?
Yeah, I think that's a great note, bringing some stuff together, because I agree it is a large topic. And I think that probably many of us have our directors of mental health and counseling in the Infinity group, which I know they're probably also talking a little bit about this. Obviously, the Canadian experience is a little bit different, but just to say we have approximately 40 clinicians. All of them are married, not all of them are full-time, but we certainly have we are not having some of the challenges around retention. We certainly are trying to bring up salaries because that is obviously a challenge. Mm-hmm. And we have some funding for specific programming for folks that aren't able to pay, mm-hmm. but we have a large group of full fee service for people coming in that are using their insurance for us. And we are making somewhat of a profit. Some years better than others, but the model that we're using has been very successful.
Well, then you'll lead us off on your next time we talk about it. Before we end, I wondered if other people on this call had, you know, topics that they'd like for us to broach during this call.
I have one other question, and that would be just what I know that somebody mentioned, I forget what it is now, but just creative programs that fall within our missions that are revenue producing. Mm-hmm. Oh, the home care. Home care is classic, mm-hmm. right?
I like that topic.
Yeah.
We do after school. Do after school care, and it's a big money maker. It also generates a lot of mental health services for children.
So that's a great thing.
I'm so glad to hear that.
So
I'd love to hear more
I'd
about
love
that.
To hear, you know, one of the programs, one of our initiatives that we want to grow is private case management because of the affluent nature of the community.
Yeah. Okay. So that's great. We can do that topic too. I think that's a really good idea.
Yeah, wonderful.
And something else that I would love to know more about is we're just starting a strategic plan process. And of course, lots of involvement, but I'd love to see if some of you have sort of condensed strategic plans. I'd love to be able to see them to compare to what we're doing here.
So you went in and out, but are you asking for samples of strategic plans from other agencies?
Yes,
so
please.
What I should say to all of you is that there is a resource library.
I've been on it.
Website.
Yeah. So
we have to populate with things that we want. Like right now, okay. We don't have a lot of things in there. There are a few things. I think Sarah asked for something. You did. You asked for something, Sarah.
Yeah.
Right. CEO assessment tool. So we're going to, I'll send something out asking for that as well as for strategic plan samples. And if you have anything you want, let me know so I can put a call
out.
Lisa, is there still access to the old AJFCA resource library?
Mm-hmm. We have a lot of those files, but they haven't necessarily been transferred. So if you want something, Megan can look for it and then we can transfer it in.
Because okay. I don't know when the last time I checked, might have been a year ago. I logged in with old credentials and it let me in.
Interesting. I have no idea.
Give it a try. I don't know. So you're welcome to use my credentials. I mean, go ahead.
One of the things
email
that
me them. Really I'll like try.
To talk about with the group is culture and staff development. You know, how we create vision and impart it and get people to buy into that when, you know, they're very programmatically focused. So a higher level conversation on those things and what kind of culture have you created? How do you use core values? Do you use any tools like high performing culture, you know, to try to impart what it is you as the executive or CEO are trying to create?
I love that topic.
That's great. These are all great topics.
Yeah.
I'm sure we would never have a dearth of things to discuss.
Yeah, exactly.
So if you think of anything else that you haven't said today, just email myself and Maxine and we'll put it on the agenda. And that would be great. And whoever wasn't here, this call is being recorded. Maxine, I forgot to put it on, so we missed your introduction.
Oh, that's okay.
Maxine Stein is the chair of this mid-size agency affinity group, just so people know. And I guess we'll let you know about what's going on with the conference. We'll let you know about
the coronavirus.
Just to be with all of you, I just hope that we'll be able to get over this and get to the conference.
Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah.
It was so good to see you all. Marla's got a big role in that conference. She's the chair of the networking committee, which is going to be a lot of fun. We're going to do a lot of great things to bring people together. So we're looking forward to hopefully seeing everyone.
Yeah, I hope so too.
Yeah. All the hard work you put in.
And Lisa, this is Ruth in St. Paul. Lisa and Maxine, thank you for your leadership for this space and for all of us creating a time and space for us to learn from each other. Appreciate it. And as a new CEO, I really appreciate it.
Well, glad you're here.
Fun for
see
me.
Everyone soon.
Thank you so much, everybody.
Bye.
Thank you very much.
Be in touch soon. Okay, take
care. Bye.
Thank you. Bye. Bye, everyone.